My name is Sean Davis, and this is Bridge. Bridge is a series of interviews with people who connect us with places, ideas, and cultures unfamiliar for many. Bridge will span the gaps and divides that separate us as a society. Today on the first episode, we speak to an 86-year-old Korean War-era veteran, an octogenarian you may know by Darcel, or Darcel 15. According to the Guinness Book of World Records, Darcel is the oldest performing drag queen on the planet. She's been performing her shows for 50 years at her club at 208 Northwest 3rd Avenue in Old Town, Portland. Over the years, the show has become a rite of passage for new Portlanders. In those 5 decades, Darcel was named Empress of the Imperial Sovereign Rose Court, selected the Grand Marshal of the Rose Festival Starlight Parade, and awarded the City of Portland Spirit Award. In fact, she's won so many awards that I can fill our time slot just naming them. I got to know Walter Cole, the Korean War era veteran, first. See, I had produced a veteran speaking event at Portland Center Stage with a wonderful woman named Sharon Knorr as a director. I found out after months of rehearsal that she had helped write the biography, Just Call Me Darcel. And she had invited Walter Cole and his partner of almost 50 years, Roxy Newhart, to the event. I want to say that I asked what pronouns to use when writing and speaking about Walter and Darcel. I was told Walter was he and Darcel was she. For me, it's just two ways to identify one of the most genuine and kind humans I've ever encountered. After listening to the stories of our veterans, Walter, with tears in his eyes, invited us all to a show at Darcel's. And during the show, she stopped, pointed us out to her audience, and said some very kind words about our performance. A week later, I drove down to Old Town at 5 in the evening on a rainy Friday afternoon during Fleet Week. Sailors in their summer white service uniforms, complete with dog bowl hats and navy blue neckerchiefs, walked the streets of Chinatown. Rain-soaked, with a coffee in my hand, I knocked on the door and Walter answered. As soon as I walked in, Roxy said hello with his perpetual smile, and Walter suggested we head downstairs where it was quieter. We walked through the kitchen, through the dressing and makeup area, and into Darcel's room. I couldn't help but feel special, like I'd been shown a sacred part of old Portland only a few people have ever seen. Rows upon rows of sequin dresses. I mean, it was more sparkly than I expected heaven would be. Walter told me he handmade all of these dresses himself. This is his fishing, he said, sitting down and creating something over the top that will amaze her audience. Finally, we sat down behind a few mirrors, both framed by oversized light bulbs, between a counter filled with more makeup colors than any rainbow, and wall lockers filled with everything a successful drag queen may need. So you grew up barely making it in the area. Linton, right? By Savio.
Linton. Yeah. Mill town.
My father making a dollar a day.
A dollar.
And so you had to overcome major obstacles and traumas, you know, like, I'm so sorry you lost your mother at 9.
Very early.
And then your father kind of was distant from you because of that.
And then molested me, yes.
Oh. And then your aunt.
Took care of it. Of course, at the time, recording.
Yeah.
At the time that happened, I didn't know that it was. I thought I'm being loved for the first time, you know, cuddled and stuff. I didn't realize that it was a problem.
Because kids don't.
Well, no. And then I didn't even bring it up until Roxy and I were together and we were doing a lecture after Darcel's. I did the lecture at the alternative school, and this young man stood up and said, my father molested me. And I turned to him without even thinking and said, so did mine, and I broke down. It all came rushing back at one time. Your mind is a strange and wonderful thing. It hides the stuff you don't want to deal with. It hides it all. And I obviously didn't want to deal with it after I got mature, you know, older. Yeah. And so, but it came back. And And it was good that it did, because, you know, I somehow, for some reason, I resented my father. He wasn't a father to me. He drank too much, and I really had no role models along the way that way, except my angel aunt who saved my life.
All of this stuff that you lived through, and then you get married young, and you have kids, and then you get into the military. And you come back from the military. I want to speak a little bit about the military, because people kind of skip over that when they talk about you. What did you do, and what was your experience?
Well, I didn't go to combat because I wore glasses. There's some reasons, you know, and so I was in headquarters, which is just as important. And we were at a supply depot.
How long were you in?
2.5 years.
And then you came home.
I came home.
And so you were married 18 years, and you were working really hard. You're working with Fred Meyers, and then you had your own businesses. And I know that they got shut down because of the
urban renewal. Every one of them except this one.
Which, hey, you might be a couple years.
Oh, God, you never know.
You better make this place historical.
You never know.
It had to be incredibly difficult to all of a sudden open up a nightclub, which you hired, I forget what her name was, Papa Scott. Papa Scott, a lesbian, and in a time where if people were just dancing together, they can get arrested.
Exactly.
That's courageous, but how did you...
Ignorance.
Oh, ignorance.
I was ignorant. I had no plan. And none of my businesses were ever, oh my God, I've got this five-year, and it'll be here and here. And in fact, when I got a liquor license here, they said, what do you expect to be making? I said, I have not a clue. So I called it a CPA. What do you think? He made it some figures, and I gave it to him. I didn't, no plans.
What did your wife say at the time?
Well,
this is your wife at 18 years, right?
We're going to go to the poorhouse.
Yeah, she's like, you're crazy.
She was a nice Italian lady who knows that if you don't get a paycheck for every week and you go.
Did you meet her in Italy?
No. We went to school together, high school. Grade school, high school. But they didn't want for anything, and they still don't want for anything.
Right. And you just did it. It had to be so difficult. So, and I'm just going.
What the difficult part of me? I know that you're kind of bouncing around this.
Yeah.
Being gay. I got to the point where I was cheating, and I was cheating on her, and I was lying to her, and that's not me. I mean, I try not to lie, cheat anybody, and I never lie. I don't tolerate liars. But I was doing it, and finally one day, and not because of Roxy. I had met him, but I mean, we hadn't been involved, just met. Not because of anybody else. Would I ever do something for somebody else, because what happens 10 years later if we get into a big thing? Look what I gave up for you. No. See, I gave up nothing for anybody else except me. And them. My daughter had her marriage failed, and she went to a psychiatrist and invited me up to sit and listen and do talk. And then it came up that I had left the family. And I told her, I said, I can never tell you how deeply sorry I am that for the hurt. But I am very, very glad I did it, mm-hmm. because I've been able to live.
And you've helped so many people
openly.
I mean, because I want to, we're getting through here, but here, your advocacy in the gay community, you know, and you said in the OPB interview that you want to be remembered because you made someone smile and care. I want, from my experience, most of the homophobic people, and I grew up in a small town, it's just they just never met anybody who was gay before. You've created, from what I've seen, an environment where people can come in. And everybody calls you an ambassador, but people can come in. It's like, well, this is not the end of the world.
No, it's a wonderful thing. Women come dragging their husbands in there. You can see the toe marks dragging them through the door to get them in here. after they're here a while, they see a Lexus and they go crazy. They love it by the time they leave.
Do you have any specific experiences where you've seen that are just really like break your heart beautiful, where somebody's like, now I get it?
Okay, I have a couple. One of them is just a general thing that young boys come out to their parents. They would bring their parents in. The parents would look around and see their contemporaries in the room enjoying someone they know is gay. It helped the young man. I got more calls about that. I also got a call about 25 years ago from a lady who said, I found ladies' underwear in the glove compartment of my husband's car. I asked him about the other woman, and he said they were his. And she said, what should I do? I said, I can't tell you what to do, but I can recommend a lot of things for you. First of all, if you can put up with it, if they're newly married, they know children, if you can put up with it, and if he doesn't hurt anybody, or you know, you don't want him running around like that, or something, taking to your friends or family, if he does it in his home, if you have it and can go along with him, you'll have a husband that'll stay with you forever. He will never, ever, ever cheat on you, ever. And I said, he's not gay. He 99% are not gay. So I said, just think about that. And she called me about 15 years later, two children. And she said, we have matching nightgowns.
I loved it.
Okay. They call us because they don't know where to turn.
Yeah. And that's got to be great to be able to do that.
It's great.
Is it ever a burden?
Oh, no.
So I want to, I don't meet too many. Oh, I wanted to talk about this on to record it. And I know that you don't do this because you want any type of recognition, but you've had a free Christmas dinner here for the people in your neighborhood for, 40 years?
40 years.
How did you decide to do that, or why did you decide to do that? And what type of people that come to?
Well, why did I decide to do it? First of all, we work here, and those people are asleep up there. Three floors of them. I got a sunway, thank them. And really that was what it was, to invite them down to dinner on Christmas Eve. Obviously they didn't have a place, to go. And that's really how it started. It was a thank you to the community. And now it's grown and we have 200 or 300 people.
But you were so giving, yet like when you're growing up, I was reading, you only got like one present every Christmas, right?
Yeah, and usually, because my birthday was November, is in November. So November I'd get a clothes and a toy at Christmas time.
I wanted to talk about the change in Portland. So I've lived here since 99 and I've seen a huge change.
Yeah.
But that, I think that is talking to somebody who's been there their entire life, and you've seen, from... You were born in 1930, and now from today, is this just one more inevitable change, or is this the change that we've experienced in the last 10 years, like really,
We were a village for years. Now we're a city, and everybody would like to be a village again. What I've seen in Portland is, when we first started here, we would not walk out the door in our costumes out the front door.
Well, you'd get arrested.
The cops are pretty good to us, but no, it would be more the fear of the public. We were just one time, we had a Carmen Ghia and we were chased. I was in drag driving from another club driving home. We lived in Corbett, and a car came next to us, and 2x4, huge 2x4, ready to beat the car. And I went right down inside this. That's when the police station was on down here in Second. I went right in the base of the police department. One thing or another, and they went out and they didn't get him, but they shoot him off.
And anyway, what year was that about?
Oh, that was the 80s.
80s.
80s, 70s.
But even in the 70s, 60s, when it was so anti-gay, you've gone from that to being the Grand Marshal of parades.
Yeah, I know.
How does that feel?
Well, it's pretty good, but we minded our own business. The community was at the first, that we had three gay bars, but they were all, better word, closeted. Uh-huh. You know, they didn't have signs hanging out. Like now we put out
but not gay yours. Flags.
Well, no, but that, yeah, but yeah. But at the first beginning, our sign didn't say what it says now. It was just a Demas Tavern.
Yeah.
I put that up later on.
After you won, was that in 1974?
74 is when I won. Before that, we were into shows. We were doing little shows for entertainment for our lesbian friends. They weren't lesbians. They were dykes then. They're lesbians now and nice people. But they were okay, but they'd fight in a minute. I had to take all the pictures, no glass pictures, plastic, no ashtrays. They had to be tin cans of tuna tin cans because they'd go flying across the room. Where I learned how to run a bar. and because I'd have to 86, I could get, the doors were swinging then like this. I could get them out without even opening the door. To go back to the changing, Williams Avenue, white or black would not drive on that street, especially at night. That's where the riots were in the 60s. And it was, the buildings were burned. I mean, it was scary up there. And we lived in Southwest at that time. So we didn't, way Southeast. So we were not really as close. I am now between Martin Luther and Williams Avenue. When I first bought, my friend said, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
I said, "Look, it's a beautiful house. I'm buying it."
So you are the oldest drag queen in, according to the Guinness Book of World Records.
Working.
Performing.
Not the oldest drag queen, but working, Greg.
Well, yeah.
There's got to be a lot of them sitting around in there.
How does that feel?
Flannel robes.
You got to be proud.
Oh, I am proud.
Yeah.
But there was a time in gay community, you don't talk about your age, especially if you get to be about almost 30. You don't talk about it. Because as soon as you get old, then you're not available or not attractive to other people. So for years, I didn't say a word. So I think it was my 60th birthday. My friends used to be, took out two ads in the Oregonian, one with my birth certificate, my picture, and a story. The other one was just my birth certificate.
Good friends.
From then on,
yeah, you had
it's public knowledge. It feels good. I'm proud. I'm happy that I can still get up and move. My cast helps me a lot. I mean, I don't have to do these stairs every number. They help me bring clothes up, and so I get a lot of help. I can walk the stairs, but why do it when you know? And it's kind of exciting because what's exciting about it is they ask, how old are you? Now, of course, it's on everywhere, but then I say 86. They go, oh, no, you're lying.
So fortuitous timing, we get to be the first ones to congratulate you on your Emmy.
Emmy?
Yeah.
Yes. The Oregon OPB, last year, I think, they brought out a Oregon Experience series. So it's OPB, Oregon Experience, Darcel 15, and you can watch it.
Oh, I have. Online. It's beautiful. It actually made me cry, and I'll tell you that. I was in the infantry. I'm a big, tough guy and every stuff. It took me a long time because being in war and stuff was like, you weren't supposed to have feelings.
No.
It took me a lot of time to figure out that feelings are, emotions are the first thing that we should talk about when we come back.
Yeah.
And so now, I can say that. And your story did. It was really beautiful.
They did a beautiful job. I was very proud of them. And it won.
Yeah, it's amazing. So if the Imperial Sovereign Rose Court declares you to be Empress again, are you going to change the name?
Oh, no, no, no,
name?
No.
They don't. You can only do it one time?
Oh, no, it's voted. It's a voted, not by the public. It's not an appointment. Sometimes we think that we're divinely empowered to be, but we're not.
So you can only do it one time? You can only be the 15th?
No, you can do it again, but why would I do it? I might lose. you win once. Don't take any chances. I think you have to wait. Either they have a rule, some 10 years or some kind of thing in between, but by then, who cares?
So what's going on with the future? What are you going to be doing? What do you hope to accomplish after you've accomplished so much?
I don't know what else is there to do. I got this reward. I just got an award for pioneering and the Friendly House, which is a great organization for folks of gray-haired people, elderly. In fact, it was the day after the children's thing. I said, here I worked at kindergarten yesterday, now I'm working at gray hairs. And that was really nice. It was just really low-keyed and really nice. Those are the kind of things. Those are my peers. That isn't somebody that doesn't know me.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful that they picked it up on that documentary and said, let's make it a winner. But it's nice when it's people that you know and they respect you.
And you respect them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. My last question here is, when you do, you're up there in your bit and you introduce your fake tits, you say, this is Fred Enmeyer. Coincidence that you worked there for such a long time?
it's the only grocery store I know. Fred Meyer's still going, but yeah. Not owned by them anymore. But I was there when Mr. Meyer was walking around.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can talk to you for a long time just how Portland's changed since you've just been living here, you know. I used to work in the Montgomery building.
Or yeah,
the,
yeah. Is that Montgomery Ward.
Park. Yeah, Montgomery Park.
Montgomery Ward.
And I got to meet and talk to for a couple, and he was actually became a member at the Post, was Bud Clark.
Uh-huh.
Remember those days? How was that when he became mayor? Would you?
Well, we went to school together.
You did?
To Lincoln High School together, oh, yeah.
Wow, I did not know.
No, yeah. So I know that he woke up the next day after winning and said, what the hell have I done? Because he had not a clue. He owned a tavern.
And he had a billboard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to ask him if I can interview him for this, too.
It'd be great now.
We need a citizen mayor, I think.
Yeah.
I like Ted Wheeler. You know, I got to know him because I ran for mayor this last time.
I like Ted.
I came in fourth place.
All right.
Yeah.
I was third in line for a commissioner, and I didn't even run.
Really?
They run.
You should run.
No.
You're not interested in politics.
In fact, I have some T-shirts that every time something happens, I have a T-shirt that says, Darcel for mayor.
Do it.
No, this not now. This was some time ago.
Yeah. You know? Yep. When I first, from the 90s up, and I was telling you that big change I noticed, is like what I had seen, because I've lived in Hawthorne, is all of these people, these artists that chose their art over money, got jobs in breweries and coffee shops and bike shops and dog shops, but they always had their art, and they didn't, if they wanted to choose money, they would have got a job somewhere else, mm-hmm. right? But they brought all that creativity into their job as well, and I don't think it's a coincidence that we were number one in beer and coffee.
Yeah,
and
that, yeah, yeah.
But now, the way that all of the prices are raising and how expensive it is to live here, they have to choose money over their art or they leave.
You can't live downtown anymore. You can't.
You can't live in my neighborhood anymore.
Well, nor mine. Right across, I paid $45,000 for my house and it's 14 rooms, Victorian. And across the street, they remodeled a house, $1 million.
Yeah.
They built the little, you know, the... on a 25-foot lot. Split the skinny lot. Goes all the way back. 600,000. They both sold within a week.
Skinny houses. Well, thanks. Yeah, I know you had Hales was in here, and he gave you Darcel Day. Do you still celebrate? It was on your birthday anyway, right?
Yeah.
Do they do anything special for you in Linton?
No, because Linton isn't there anymore. It's a
the sign favorite. Is.
There's not what used to be a real town. We had every you had doctors and the whole thing.
Yeah, now it's got a now Subway sandwich and a sign.
And well, that's at the end of that's new. The community center and those two or three taverns that are still there. But we went out to Linton Community Center when they wanted to refurbish it, and we started. We did three shows there to make money, to start their seed money for the.
Oh, you did.
Yeah,
we did. See, and that's that giving spirit I was talking about. You're like, I don't give. That's what I'm talking about. You give so much. I
mean, we all went out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they made $20,000 or something. I'd say them, and
that's got to be amazing. Like I, that's all. That's all I have, unless I miss something. Yeah, and I'm just. Thank you so much for doing
You're
it.
You're welcome.
It's good to have that veteran connection, but also, and that's where I was coming into it with.
Yeah, yeah.
But I found that there is more of a connection, you know, because I really want to help my community out, and I do it with the veterans, and I know there's difficulties, but your life is pretty inspiring. Yeah. So do not
have a home at all. You know, it's obvious that I'm no subject matter expert on sexual orientation, drag queens, or even performance art for that matter, but I do consider myself a person who can identify an altruistic community leader. While there may be an innumerable amount of differences between myself and Darcelle, I also spotted a lot of similarities. And more than that, I saw in Darcelle traits that I hope to one day achieve. She's an inspiring human being, and if there were a theme laced through the few interactions that I had with Darcelle, it would be the wisdom to fight for who you truly are inside. The ability to be honest with people is one difficult to achieve, but the ability to be honest with yourself is nearly impossible sometimes. This wisdom, her kindness mixed with her wit and drag queen flair, truly has made Darcelle a personality who helped build the amazing Portland we know, but also makes her an ambassador who bridges the gap between the straight and the LGBTQ community. If you haven't seen a show, I suggest go down there. If it's been a while, still go down there. It's at 208 Northwest 3rd Avenue, Portland, Oregon. For reservations or information, call 503-222-5338. 503-222-5338. Show times are Wednesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. And then again, Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Thanks to Joe Cantrell for helping with the video portion of the interview. I hope to get that out soon. I would also like to thank Portland singer-songwriter Chris Ashby for letting me use his song Safer Machines off his album Galveston for the show. Bridge will return in a few weeks. We will interview longtime Portland artist and owner and operator of Po' Boy Art and Framing, Jason Brown. See you next time. I'm Sean Davis, and this has been a part of Hubris Productions, Portland.
Still